This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tea Clinic. One visit can change your life. Men's Tea Clinic offers a variety of men's wellness programs to help you meet your goals and keep you as strong as you've ever been. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEA today or visit menstclinic.com. That's menstclinic.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
8 o'clock hour here on Sean and RJ on 105 through the Phantom. RJ Choppy. He is Bobby Bell. Peyton and Aiden alongside. We have got Nick Harris, Fort Worth Star-Telegram, at 920. He was at the Maverick game last night.
He was. Yep. He is obviously a guy that we're going to talk a lot of draft with, but he was also there with the Fort Worth Star-Telegram covering the game. He was in attendance, was out there in Victory Plaza. I ran into him, so I was like, hey, you want to jump on tomorrow, talk about draft and some other stuff? And he was like, sure. So 9:20, he will join us. Was supposed to be in studio. He got home a little late from Mavericks coverage. So he ended up saying, I think I'm gonna Zoom it tomorrow. So we're going to do Zoom. And Aiden, I'm telling you that now because I just remembered to tell you. But
how young is Peyton Russell 1 hour from now?
9 o'clock. And we'll have a special lifeline. Neither one of you are aware of who it is, as usual. It's meant to be a surprise. I think the listeners are going to be excited to hear who it is.
Okay. All right. Very good.
Really quickly, a reminder that with Nick Harris coming up and a lot of different draft stuff, and we're about to talk draft here, and who are the most successful drafting teams, and does it actually correlate to a lot of success? It is our staple draft event coming up on April 17th. 6:45 is when the doors open. With you, the Tolo, it's Draft 101 in our fan showroom. That's 4131 North Central Expressway in Dallas. Our Super Bowl winning scout, Brian Broaddus, Zach Wolchuk, myself. We're going to team up with DallasCowboys.com for a night of draft talk, debate, and questions. Not only that, dinner on us thanks to Whataburger, plus plenty of giveaways, completely free. And we can't wait to see you for Draft 101 on your home of the Cowboys, 105 through the Fan. You don't have to sign up. You just show up on April 17th. Have a good time. Again, it's 4131 North Central Expressway in Dallas.
All right. Very nice. Very nice. It's a great, it is good for educational purposes.
Yes.
Very, very nice.
I have to underline the Dallas part, just so, you know, Mark Johnson on the YouTube knows that he's not going to be able to come around because he doesn't like Dallas.
No, of course. Very nice. Very nice. So remember how I had said, Adam Schefter told us that the tush push was likely to happen and that the Detroit playoff seeding rule proposal change was not likely to happen. Albert Breer has a different take on this. He's reporting something different. He says Roger Goodell really wants this to happen. He really wants to pass this through. And it's with that, he wants to restore the end of the regular season. So if you go look at the end of the regular season, okay, Houston, Green Bay, the Rams, Washington, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, and the Chargers. Okay, these were teams that would be playing for a different seed in Week 18.
Mm-hmm.
Under the current format, Houston was locked into the 4, Philadelphia was locked into the 2. Under Detroit's, Houston could have been the 4, 5, or 6, or 7 seed. So the only teams that played their quarterbacks in Week 18 was the Chargers and the Steelers. Philly sat, Washington sat, Rams sat, Packers sat, Houston sat. The Rams could have been 4, 5, or 6 under Detroit's proposal, or 7. Washington could have been 4, 5, or 6. Green Bay could have been 4, 5, or 6. You know, and part of, I assume part of Detroit's proposal is that they had to play a 12-win team in their second-round game whereas a team that finished below them in Philadelphia got to play a 10-win team. So what they might do, and Roger knows this, is what they might keep the seeding the same for the first round, but then reseed after that to protect your one seed.
Okay. I could see that. If anything that gets more potential intense outcomes, or the league is going to be a fan of.
Yeah.
So that makes some sense.
Because if you have those seven teams and five of them are sitting their quarterbacks, how much more unwatchable are week 18 games?
Yeah, exactly. It completely changes that is going to be in large part the biggest factor in terms of the quality of it.
So Roger knows. He knows that he doesn't have the votes right now. That's why he's tabling this thing till May. Draft is coming up, like you said, 10 days?
No, not quite. We're about two weeks from today. 2 weeks. So over at FTN, FTN Fantasy, which is a really cool site. That's where
so they moved DVOA over to.
Yeah, that was the, what was it? What was their, it was Football Outsiders.
Football Outsiders.
So Football Outsiders had moved a lot of their stuff over to FTN Fantasy. And I liked this article over there. It was the least and most successful first round teams in the NFL draft over the last 10 years. Because we've talked about this. The first round pick is so crucial because of the fifth year option. You're talking about locking into somebody for half of a decade at a cheap rate. If you nail those picks, you're generally thought of as being, hey, we're going to have sustained success here. And if you miss them, you can really dig yourself in a hole. Mm-hmm. More so than even if you were to, if you were to hit your first round pick and have good picks or have bad picks the rest of the way, that can sometimes be more helpful to you than if you have a bad first round pick
right.
and some solid picks the rest of the draft. That's how crucial that gap can be. But over at FTN, they decided to take and rank over the last decade how good teams have been at their first round draft selections. So they say there's a couple notes here. First, this is just about the players selected. They're not evaluating trade ups, trade downs, okay. how much a team gave up to make the pick. This is just you selected a player. How did he do? Second, this is only how players performed in their original tenure with the team that drafted them. So Sam Darnold made the Pro Bowl and got MVP votes last year with the Vikings, but the Jets get no credit for that in terms of was it a successful draft pick.
All right.
Third, there is not much in the way of objective criteria here just because it's extremely hard to compare a tackle drafted eighth to a wide receiver drafted 27th to a quarterback drafted second. Mm-hmm. So if you look at all the first round picks as a group, successes and failures definitely start to kind of come into focus. So they started it by saying, let's look at the least successful team. So part one was a breakdown of the back 16. So from 17 to 32, the worst drafting team in the first round over the last 10 years is who, RJ Choppy?
The Raiders.
NFC team.
The Giants.
The Chicago Bears.
Okay.
Whose first round picks include Kevin White, who played 14 games with the team. You've got Darnell Wright, who hasn't necessarily been a big success. Justin Fields, Roquan Smith, who they traded. Mitchell Trubisky, who ended up busting. You were close. The Las Vegas Raiders were second on this list, followed by the Titans. The Patriots are fourth last. But here's the one that's relevant to the Dallas Cowboys. Number 26 on this list of the worst drafting teams in the NFL is the New York Giants. That's also the only NFC East team in the back half of the league on this list. They've obviously had some swing and miss picks with Andrew Thomas, Kadarius Toney. Mm-hmm. Evan Neal has not played well. Deontay Banks. So Daniel Jones, they got into that contract and then immediately walked away from it. So that's been a failure. The one that's interesting on this side of the list, 23. So we're talking about bottom 10 in the league in terms of success over the last decade with their first round picks. Who do you think it would be? It's a good team. And definitely an outlier around all the other teams.
Kansas City.
The San Francisco 49ers. San Francisco has been very fortunate to hit Purdy. Fred Warner was a late round pick. Dre Greenlaw was a day three pick, I believe. When you look at some of their first round picks.
Was Ayuk a second rounder?
Ayuk was a first.
Okay. So he was a first. Bosa was a first.
Trey Lance was in there. Javon Kinlaw didn't play totally well. Mike McGlinchey was okay, but left. Reuben Foster spent 16 games with the team. Solomon Thomas, who's now here with the Cowboys, he didn't ultimately pan out the way you would expect him to. They ended up trading DeForest Buckner before his second contract. Joshua Garnett was not exactly a successful player. He only played 22 games there. So their first round picks, they've missed a lot. They've been really fortunate to hit on some stuff on day two and day three. That's been
Parcells used to say, it doesn't matter if you hit on your first round picks as long as you hit on other picks. Like if you miss on a first, but you hit on your seventh. But you know, I think the flip side of that though is that it, you know, hitting on your first gives you a, like what is hitting on your seventh?
Like so, if you hit on your
first round pick, you're getting a difference maker. If you hit on your seventh, you're just getting a starter to me.
Yeah, if I draft Brock Purdy in the seventh or the first, I'm considering Brock Purdy a success at that pick, right? Whereas, you know, Jock Reeves, the old corner for the Cowboys, he would be considered a success as a seventh round pick. If you drafted him the first, that's a bust.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I agree. You got to tailor it a little bit. So that's why I say,
yeah, because I think he was using the Jay Ratliff example, I think.
Ratliff was a really good player. Yeah, that's a success.
That's a success. But he was a really... Now, if you drafted him in the first round, you're still like, okay, you know what? We hit. We hit on Jay Ratliff in the first round.
Yeah, because that was a guy who's a 5-6-time Pro Bowler and was really, really good. All right, we get to the front half of the list where the NFC East teams all are. Number 16 is the Washington Commanders on this list, which is...
Mid-pack?
It's right in the middle. They say the Commanders' recent first-round history has very little middle ground. Brandon Scherff, Jonathan Allen, Daron Payne, and obviously Jaden Daniels are success stories, while Josh Doctson, Dwayne Haskins, Jahan Dotson, and Emmanuel Forbes have not necessarily been big-time successes. But that was 16 on the list, the Washington Commanders. Number 13, the Philadelphia Eagles. Said if you do this exercise again in 5 years, the Eagles might rise a lot because their recent "Hey, let's get all Georgia defenders" strategy has led to a lot more success. Since 2021, their first-round haul of Devontae Smith, Jordan Davis, Jalen Carter, Nolan Smith, and Quinyon Mitchell, which Devontae Smith was not a Georgia player or a Georgia defender, and Quinyon Mitchell went a long way toward their Super Bowl title a few months ago. But before that, things were worse. Nelson Agholor was a first-round pick for them. Carson Wentz, obviously. Andre Dillard was a bust on the offensive line. Jalen Reagor didn't do very much with them, the old TCU product.
Riga.
So that has not necessarily been a success. Quickly, let's go to the top 10, which the Dallas Cowboys are in.
Okay.
Number 10, the Minnesota Vikings. 9, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Sounds like successful teams for the most part right now. 8, Baltimore Ravens. 7, this is an outlier. The Cleveland Browns are the 7th team on this. Their biggest issue is they've hamstrung themselves with awful contracts, namely the Deshaun Watson one. Number 6, the Dallas Cowboys. CeeDee Lamb and Micah Parsons are the home runs in Dallas, but there haven't been many out-and-out misses. Maybe Mozzie Smith, and the jury's out on Tyler Guyton. I would say Taco Charlton was an outright miss. Before that, it was a bunch of good picks. Not over the moon, not busts, just guys you like. Even Ezekiel Elliott, who's great for a long while, has the downside of going 4th overall, right ahead of Jalen Ramsey, Ronnie Stanley, and DeForest Buckner. These have been their first-round picks over the last several years. They had a great run. Byron Jones, Ezekiel Elliott, Taco was not great. Leighton Vander Esch was a Pro Bowler, CeeDee Lamb, Micah Parsons, Tyler Smith, and then the last two have been Mozzie Smith and Tyler Guyton, where you're a little shaky on there. Rest of the top 5 on this list, 5, the Atlanta Falcons, 4, the Kansas City Chiefs, Chop, 3, the Los Angeles Chargers, 2, the Los Angeles Rams. So for all the bleep them picks.
How are they the best? Because this is just first rounders?
It's the quality of their picks, yeah. So they've only had 3 in the last decade. They've made 3 first round picks. Those picks are...
So they made Goff.
Uh-huh.
I don't...
Gurley.
Oh my God.
Todd Gurley, Jared Goff, and Jared Verse. Which Jared Verse was the defensive rookie of the year.
I mean... I know they traded Goff, but like he's turned out to be a successful player.
Yeah.
Gurley, they gave him a second contract. He was successful.
Goff made a Super Bowl with him. So, yeah, he was successful there, too. The number one drafting team in the NFL is?
Detroit?
MCDC. Motor City Dan Campbell. They are the number one team. Early part of the decade wasn't bad. They got 2 of their current starting offensive linemen, plus an upper-tier tight end. That alone would have had the Lions flirting with the top 10, but after whiffing on Jeff Okuda in 2020, the Lions took off in the 2020s. Penei Sewell, Aiden Hutchinson, Jameis Williams, Jahmyr Gibbs, and Jack Campbell in 21 through 23. And then
Has Campbell been a good player? Has Campbell, like, hit?
Campbell's been good.
They killed that draft. The pundits killed that draft, the Gibbs-Campbell draft.
Yeah, and those two have been really successful.
Yeah.
I remember the Cowboys area scout, Justin Stuckey, for Jack Campbell. He came on with us the second day of the draft show, and we were like, what was your favorite pick of the first round? What was one where you were like, nuts? And he said Jack Campbell. He's like, that was a wonder. I loved him. I thought he was really good. Detroit got a good player. And he's proven to be that.
Wow. All right. There we go. A little NFL draft as we took a slight break from the misery of last night. The misery of last night. Rangers avoid the sweep. Terrible news. Terrible news on Wyatt Langford. The Mavs somehow made us all more angry than we were before. It's all next on 105.3 The Fan.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The 1-1 hit high and deep out into center. Crow Armstrong ranging back to his right. He's looking up, and it's out of here. Jonah Heim blast one up into the bleachers above the 368 marker in left center. It's his third home run of the year. Texas back on top, 3-1.
Told you, 96.
That is a Hixie with a call on a game you heard right here. Rangers get 6-2 winners. Get a 6-2 win over the Chicago Cubs. They avoid the sweep, and they've got a needed day off for that bullpen today as they get back at it tomorrow on the road in Seattle. That was a big start by Tyler Mahle yesterday. He went 7 innings, only got a couple of hits, the 1 run. But as important as the win was the fact that the bullpen got pretty taxed in the previous two games. So they get basically that day off for the most part, and they get today off. Huge.
Dude, the Mahle start, the first one of the year against Boston, was so concerning. Just how much trouble he was having throwing strikes.
He didn't even get out of the second inning, right?
Start? Just an inning and two thirds, and he walked four. It was a rough start. But these last two games, dude, he gives you 5 innings against Tampa, solid pitching, and he gives you 7 against Chicago. So over the last 12 innings, he's allowed 3 hits and 1 earned run. Struck out 9, walked 3. You can live with that. Yeah, you'd like to see a little bit more strikeout stuff probably than 9 strikeouts in 12 innings. But overall, I'm not going to be complaining. If he's getting weak contact, if he's, you know, getting to a spot and not walking players or walking batters and being like really out of sync and not able to command his pitches, that's a bigger problem to me than just not having a bunch of strikeouts. So he threw 19 strikes looking yesterday, so he was really pinpoint with everything that he wanted to do, but I thought he was really good yesterday.
Seager gets a pair of home runs. That was good to see. The first one, they both were like, just over the wall into that little, as Bassett called it, the net thingy they have there in Wrigley, and then Heim with the home run as well. So they are back at it tomorrow. Marcus Semien went 1-for-4. In the game. We need to get him going. Got to get him going, but, you know, it is what it is with him at this point.
Yep. By the way, 36-year-old Kevin Pillar also picked up a hit in this game and scored a run, and he was in there because Wyatt Langford obviously was getting the MRI, and there was some concern about the right side tightness, and we found out it's an oblique strain chop, and he is headed to the 10-day IL now.
That really stinks. I do think that, you know, obviously the 10-day IL will be retroactive to the 8th, I suppose, so he could probably come back on the 18th, maybe the 19th, depending on which they make it to. I would only bring him back there if he literally is 100%.
Yeah.
Like, literally, go back and MRI that stupid thing again and make sure it's not like there's not like any kind of scarring or scar within the muscle tissue. Just go ahead and get him healthy. If those obliques, it's like, well, if you get those to start the year, you might have a chance of running the risk of having them all year.
Right.
So really, especially if it's cold out, let him just take a rest.
Would you like a an Evan Carter update? Since we're like, oh, we've got a spot in the outfield now.
An Evan Carter update.
Seven games into his stint at Round Rock, he is 2-for-25 with two singles, eight walks, eight strikeouts.
When did those two hits come? Were they the recent games or were they early on?
He got a base hit in his second game on March 29th, and then he went hitless for a while. The three games ago against Toledo, he had a base hit. But, I mean, he's been walking more. He hasn't been striking out as much. So, the last three games, he's got a hit, five walks, and one strikeout. But he's also got two stolen bases in that time. But he's not hitting the ball yet, and that's a little bit of a concern.
Mm. That is a concern.
But he stopped at the strikeout issue. So he had some issues. He went like, it was like, he had in three straight games, it was like two strikeouts, three strikeouts, two strikeouts. So, I mean, he was struggling there for a little bit with that.
Yeah, I don't, like, it doesn't bother me much if he's not putting up great numbers in the minors. I just care about his health. I assume his eye is going to be okay.
I don't want to see a contact issue with him.
No, I don't.
Where he's striking out three times in AAA. That shouldn't. This is the guy who came up and set the major league record for doubles in a postseason.
Yeah.
And you've got two, you know, singles at this point, and you're having some games where you're striking out three times. That's a little bit concerning. And he's got me a little worried at this point.
Yeah. A little bit. Not gonna lie on that one.
254, can we talk about how bad Garcia has been for over a year and a half now? I think we talked plenty about how Adolis Garcia was awful last year.
We talked a lot about that last year. This year, now look, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I feel like he's been hitting the ball hard this year.
Average exit velocity, he's in the 95th percentile right now. On average, he's hitting the ball 95 miles per hour. He's been smoking the ball. It's just, it's not landing for him yet.
A lot of ground balls. A lot of hard hit ground balls.
Yes.
And that could be the way they're pitching him. It could be that he's getting on top of the ball because he's got that launch angle swing and he's just a little, I guess, early with it. But he's only hitting 190. His OPS is just below six, just below 700. He is not having a great year, but he is hitting the ball hard. I would not worry about him based on the peripherals at this moment.
When you look at his numbers, so his average exit velocity, he's 95th percentile. The hard hit percentage, he's 86th percentile.
Right. So, look, I mean, the numbers show that if you have a consistent string of hard hit balls, even if you don't have a high batting average, eventually that's going to even out. And you will, over time, get more hits than you would not. If you get a lot of jam shots, but they're dinks and dunks, and you're still getting hits, over time, that's going to even out the other way.
And look, it's early, obviously, but if you look at his K percentage, his strikeout percentage, this is what it's been throughout his career. 41%, 57%, 31%, 27%, 27%, 27%. So that's kind of where he's settled in. This year, he's at 9% strikeout rate. That's 96th percentile of baseball. He's making contact, and he's hitting the ball hard. In fact, his expected batting average, according to Baseball Savant, is .286. Like, he's handling it.
Good.
The ball's obviously got to fall. I understand that, and he absolutely was not good last year. So you're right about that, 254. But I'm encouraged by his approach right now. He still chases pitches. He'll still swing and miss and stuff, but he's making much more consistent contact than he did last year, and he's hitting the ball a hell of a lot harder.
Yeah, he is. Sean and RJ here on 105 through the Phantom. RJ Choppy. He's Bobby Belt. Sean is back next week. He's on paternity leave. He did not get Nico'd, but no. Nico, we would love to see Nico.
He got more Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody on the text called him Street Clothes Sharif.
Street Clothes. we would love to. We saw Street Clothes last night. He did play. That was nice of him. The Mavericks.
That 4 points he put up in the first half to Lucas 31. But
It almost made the trade a wash. I mean, look, I'll tell you this. He ran up and down the floor really well.
What was that, 2% body fat?
And he didn't get hurt. He did not get hurt. You know, 13 points for Anthony Davis in 33 minutes. I mean, you'll take that kind of game. And then it's nothing against AD. He didn't do anything wrong.
I'll say this, though. And Sean pointed this out on Twitter yesterday.
Well.
And there were I saw a lot of people chirping about this afterwards. The fact that this is supposed to be revenge game for AD, too. Like, this is his game against the Lakers. This is supposed to be like, all right, I'm going to show you what you missed. And he did look like he was just... Doris Burke called him out at one point. She's like, you can't just be 35 feet from the basket, dude. You got to be engaged in this. And he did look pretty passive at times. I wonder if... You know how he talked about a couple weeks ago how he's been in a bad headspace, basically. Mentally, this whole thing's been tough on him. Were you here when we played that clip from him after one of the games? So he's clearly had some issues adjusting, I would imagine, to this new reality. If that's the case, I imagine last night was probably also pretty difficult of walking into an arena of like, oh, here's just how obsessed everybody is with the guy I was traded for. Like, and they are chanting fire Nico because they think that I was such a paltry return. I could see that potentially whether getting in his head. Yeah,
whether or not he wants to admit it, when you hear an entire arena chant fire your GM for trading away the guy that you were traded for, that has to hit. Whether or not the fans are even intending it in any way to be directed at you, they're telling you they want the other guy back, regardless of you. That's got to hit hard.
Can I share?
No.
Well, it's something Derek Holland had wanted us to talk about. So yesterday I had put up a tweet when Luka was crying, very emotional, during the pregame when they had the tribute video. And I had tweeted that and I said, the Mavs are such hot garbage. And Derek Holland had an issue with that. But he thought it was, he and I both agree, it's a good example of how we can talk through different perspectives. So Derek had said, his perspective obviously is an athlete. He said, I'd have to disagree. I think it comes from somewhere else. The players have no say in this. So to call the Mavs themselves garbage is dumb. It comes from a higher up. People who don't know basketball or sports in general. People who don't understand what you had just to watch it go off in your own arena and realize how stupid you truly are. Not the players with Mavs on their chest. The people who make the final decision, that's who's garbage. People who think that being book smart, not sports smart, is garbage. People who think someone is overweight after just taking the team to the NBA Finals the year before is dumb as S. People who think he's out of shape after almost being MVP is bleeping stupid. People that don't realize you had a bleeping icon in your lap and decided trading him was better are garbage. Those are the people who are garbage. And trust me, they know who they are. They made the mistakes, not the fans or the players or the people who work at the arena selling the tickets to the fans. That's my two cents. And that's when I told him, I said, totally respect where you're coming from, especially as somebody who was an athlete who felt like I don't represent the decisions that are being made above me.
Yeah, the team, it's not the players. The players have no say in this.
Well, and
you know, I've never liked the idea of looking at somebody's body and telling you they're out of shape based on their body structure.
Sure.
There are different types of bodies that simply will be more shredded than others. You could eat the same thing. You and I could have the same workout regimen. We could eat the same thing. And one of us might look more cut than the other one.
Don't talk down about yourself like that.
Your body structure is your body structure.
Mm-hmm.
If James Harden worked out like LeBron, he might look like LeBron. He also might not because of his body type. It's just the way it is. Like, it's just the way it is. So I never like to look at somebody and just say, hey, look, they're out of shape because he looks like Luka and Joker and not like LeBron James.
Yeah, and I mean, I respect where he's coming from, but like I told him that, I said, that's semantics to me. The Mavs in this particular context, if somebody says the Mavs, you're clearly talking about the organizational operations, which without question, they have been garbage. And they have been cowardly about their approach and the way they've bullied the fan base from their ivory tower. And it's all without ever standing up and really taking the criticism head on. Instead, they resort to the authoritarian muzzling, taking the clown noses, taking the shirts off, whatever else it'll be. And I told Derek, I was like, I just think that in and of itself is disgusting. And you can't divorce that right now from the catch-all name of the Mavs. Players have been admirable, and it sucks that they're playing right now for what is a bad, trashy organization.
What is coming up next in Below the Belt?
Oh, baby. Let's talk about Ashton Jeanty and why he is pretty much the perfect prospect and worth breaking your running back rules at pick number 12. That's next in Below the Belt right here on The Fan.
The great Bobby Belt.
Bobby Belt is an idiot.
Don't make me take off my belt.
Don't make me take off my belt.
We're not.
Over to you, Bobby.
Why Ashton Jeanty breaks all of your rules for running backs. Let's talk about it here in Below the Belt.
Below
before we do that.
The Belt.
Exactly. Below the Belt. Let's talk a little bit about, want to tell you guys, and we mentioned this earlier this hour, but you're going to want to head over here to the station on April 17th, 6:45, doors open. for Draft 101. No sign-up required. You just show up. It is our staple draft event with you, the Tolo, Draft 101, in our fan showroom, 4131 North Central Expressway in Dallas. Super Bowl-winning scout Brian Broaddus, Zach Walchuk, myself. We team up with DallasCowboys.com for a night of draft talk, debate, and questions. Not only that, dinner's going to be on us thanks to Whataburger, plus plenty of giveaways, completely free, and we can't wait to see you for Draft 101 on your home of the Cowboys, 105 through the Fan. And I imagine one of the things we'll get into there at Draft 101, Chop, is one Ashton Jeanty. Now, Ashton Jeanty is the Boise State running back. A lot of carries, a lot of touches over his career. More than you'd want probably out of a running back, especially if you're going to take one in the first round. So that's been a concern for some people. And a lot of people don't want to take running backs in the first round, period. No matter if it's the 32nd pick or the 6th pick or whatever it is, they don't want to take a running back in the first round.
I'm generally against it.
So here's my thought process on running back in the first round and why I'm okay with it usually. The time to maximize a running back is probably the first 5 years.
Right.
And you're going to get him that first round rate wherever you pick him is probably still going to be well below top of the market running back value. So like you may have Zeke, for instance, his first several years here in Dallas, Zeke averaged, his average contract value those first few years was like 4.5. And then they signed him to like a $15 million deal. And that's when he wasn't any good. 4.5, you'll take Zeke's production all day long when he was 2016, 2017, 2018. So to me, I think when you can get that cheaper value and say, all right, can I get a top five running back in terms of production for $5 million a year? Okay, I'll take that. And he's fresh and we can use him up. All right, let's do it. That's the time to me. That's why I think I can see the argument for first round pick. I still probably wouldn't want to go top five or anything like that on a running back. But yeah, absolutely. First round, I can be talked into that.
Zeke in 2016, was like you said, it was 4.5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So he's 12th. He was 12th in salary at running back.
And he was arguably the best one in football. Arguably the best running back in football that year.
He was. Look, I get it. I understand. My thing is, if I'm going to draft a first rounder, like I need two contracts from him. That's my. I don't want 4 years. I'm looking at 10. I'm trying to draft a 10-year starter in the first round. However,
but you need a running back.
Yeah.
Right. So if you look at it and say at the 12th pick, the best player by far is a running back. We need one.
I don't have a problem if they draft Jeanty. I don't have a problem with it. It's just not my first choice of what I'd like to do. If I could get 80% of Ashton Jeanty in the fourth round, I would rather do that.
We talked about Jeanty a couple weeks ago, so we had a really good experience. One of the things we do with Jared Sandler's charity, the Sandlot charity, is we will, we'll talk to, we'll have different experiences, dinners, different things like that that you can take part in. And one of the ones that we had was a scouting experience up here on the weekend. So Broaddus and I sat up here, ate pizza with a couple people. John Hall came through.
Sucking for charity.
He was the one who wanted his buddy Joe came with him. And it was great. We sat there for 2 hours and just watched tape and explained scouting and things like that. It was an awesome time. And one of the things we did was we brought up Jeanty. And we talked about, here's an example of somebody who checks all the boxes. And we're going to show you all the different examples and the ways that he checks the boxes. And we watched various things. Go back and watch. If you get the opportunity to, go watch his tape against Oregon. In fact, I'll probably do a more in-depth video on this that we can look at where there will be clips to back it up. But if you watch the way Ashton Jeanty plays against Oregon, you're going to see every single last thing that you need to see from a running back. So you're talking about burst, the initial quickness, the body control, the lateral quickness, the creativity, the vision, the way he sets up his blocks, his play temperament, his physicality, his ability to finish. Mm-hmm. He checks all of it. It shows up on his tape. One of the things that's really exciting, and you'll see this on the fan cam here in just a sec if you want to look up at it, it's almost as much fun watching Ashton Jeanty pass block as it is to watch him run. His rushing highlights are really exciting and things like that. But if you're a fan of just watching somebody pick up a blitzer, like look at that shot. Like he is just so strong. There's a couple plays up here that you'll see. He is such a fantastic pass blocker. He's great chipping. He's always looking for work. He is really stable, really quick mental processor in terms of the way, how quickly he sees where a blitzer is coming and the way that he steps up into that block. Fearless. Love him. I think he's fantastic. as a pass protector and somebody that can make a real difference for your passing game, especially if you have some concerns about the way that your offensive line is blocking things up. So I think Ashton Jeanty as a pass blocker is really good. As a receiver, he's impressive. I mean, he was not so much this past year, but in previous years, Boise State has used him split out wide, running legitimate routes as a receiver. And he's done a really – runs legit routes. It's not just
– because most running backs aren't out there winning routes.
You're running a smoke route or you're taking a screen or maybe
You're not winning your route. You're just – you're finding a gap in the zone.
You might be motioned out just as a diversion or something. Like that. Jeanty is genuinely used at times, especially previous years, not so much last year. Like I said, he's genuinely being used as an option in the progression. And we'll take advantage of things. Now, he's a little on the shorter side, 5'9". So, I mean, a lot of times it's motion him to the slot. Mm-hmm. He runs slot-like routes like the Y receiver, which is the slot receiver. But he's somebody who can contribute in that way. As a runner, this is the way that I evaluated Ashton Jeanty. So if you look at what his plus traits are, body control, vision, balance, yards after contact, all of that is really impressive. He looks, I mean, you legitimately watch him carry the ball sometimes. He looks like a pinball. So when you play pinball, you just see that quick bounce and change of direction. That's the way he runs. He will bounce off of defenders.
Do you think Peyton's ever played pinball?
No. I don't know if Peyton knows what pinball is. Do you know what
the arcade machine thing where you pull the right side and it goes up around?
Do you ever sit there and just bang it?
How do you do it? No, you got to hit the table again like you did. He's that's a lot of thrust.
Chavi is giving y'all a show of the fake. That's ended up on Carter Freeman's highlight reel.
Yeah.
At the end of the year.
I mean, you got to just bang the side.
It is incredibly rare to see Ashton Jeanty go down on first contact. I don't know if I can think of many instances where he was taken down the first time he was contacted with by the defenders. I mean, it's generally second defender and usually more than that. He processes a step ahead of everybody else. The other 21 players on the field are not seeing things as quickly as he is. He reads his blocks. He anticipates holes and cutback lanes a beat before they've even developed. He's got really high marks in terms of his short area quickness, the footwork, the acceleration. All of it is really, really good. He consistently put out prolific output against efficient run defenses like San Jose State, UNLV. He also did it against top-end talents like Oregon in 2024, Washington in 2023 he was great against.
All right, let me ask you this. Okay, so will your concern level – look, Zeke played 10 games against the Big Ten or whatever the nine, maybe it's nine. Does it concern you at all that he didn't have to go through a grind of a power conference? Where, he played well against Oregon, but the following week he didn't have to play USC. And the following week he didn't have to play Ohio State. And then he didn't have to go play Indiana. You know what I mean? Like, every week it's another one coming at you.
So I understand why it might be concerned. You can only...
Do you look at it like, hey, he's fresher now?
I mean, he was averaging 10 yards per carry for a lot of the season. I mean, we're talking about he got to 1,000 yards rushing before he got to 100 carries. That's just insane. I don't care who you're doing that against. But if you're doing that against, essentially mid-level competition, okay. But the issue is then, like, when you look at the way he performs against Washington and Oregon, and you can only couple it with those performances, then I think it's really easy to look at it and go, all right, that's a stud. That's a really top player. I mentioned in my notes, pass protection highlights are almost as fun as the running. It's teach tape technique, top end mental processing when identifying incoming blitzers. I will say this. If you're looking for just slight things that you could ding him for, just to say he's not just a slam dunk, there are some concerns there. For such a physical runner, he occasionally struggles to get movement in short yardage and goal line situations. So if you're first and goal on the one and it's stacked up, the leg churn he gets, he doesn't move the pile necessarily, and he's kind of a thick built guy. He's a strong guy. I expected to see more of that than I did on his tape. He shows better instincts, I think, running between the tackles than he does to the corner. So when he's running inside, I think the instincts are fantastic, and they're still good to the outside, but it doesn't happen as quickly for him. More when he gets stuff outside, it's him bouncing off of tacklers, being really difficult to bring down. He does have some impressive speed. Like, you'll see him ramp it up a gear when he gets to the second level and can outrun people. And so I think if you want to say, how can I see a player and go, all right, this is what it's supposed to look like. Daniel Jeremiah has this quote that he said before, and I'm going to paraphrase. Daniel Jeremiah from NFL Network had said that every year after the draft or even before the draft, he will watch tape of the best players in the NFL. Because he said, you see so much football during draft season. You're watching so many different players. You need to recalibrate your eyes. You need to remind yourself what the standard looks like. You need to remind yourself what great looks like so that you can properly put into context what you're watching during draft season. And Genty's a guy who, if you want to get a start on just, let me see what the standard should look like. If you can get your hands on some Ashton Genty film or just go watch his highlights, that's what the standard's supposed to look like at running back. That's everything that you were supposed to do at the position, Ashton Genty does. And that's why he breaks your rules when you say, I don't mean you, but just in general, if you have a rule that says, I can't draft a running back in the first round, Ashton Genty is the reason why. Okay, there's the exception.
He's the rule breaker.
He's the exception. That's Ashton Genty. Really quickly before we wrap up here, just final minute before we roll into how young is Peyton Russell with a surprise lifeline whenever Peyton needs it. The Cowboys did sign another offensive lineman yesterday. It's a guy who recently came out of retirement, but I'm actually excited about this. Signing an offensive lineman in April who came out of retirement doesn't sound like an exciting player. This is Sadiq Charles.
Okay.
Offensive tackle from LSU a few years back. Ended up getting drafted by Washington. Retired last year. Dude, he was drafted in 2020, I believe. He is 25 years old. He is young still, and he had some great tape at LSU. He put up some decent work at times with Washington and Tennessee Titans. It was not always consistent, but there's tackle and guard flexibility there. Todd Archer reports that he's likely to play on the interior for the Cowboys, but that's somebody with some flexibility who had a really high ceiling they liked a lot. Duke Manyweather, who trained him leading up to the draft, I remember him telling me in 2020 that he was like, there are some flashes. It's not exactly it, but the way that he plays a strength and power and the build he has, there's some flashes at times like, oh, you can see some Tyron Smith glimpses here.
Okay.
Like you see some of that with him. And so high upside, I think for an April signing, it's a fantastic one. So really excited about Sadiq Charles.
Very nice. B-Lo.
B-Belt.
Here on 105.3 The Fan. 9 o'clock hour. Heading your way next with a little How Young is Peyton Russell. That's coming up next on 105.3 The Fan.